This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll meet a Manitowoc couple who took an epic journey by boat and completed America's Great Loop. Now, as we start the new year, we have a lot to look forward to, including new TV shows or catching up on some of the shows we might have missed from last year. Our next guest is here to share some favorites from 2022 and some things to watch for in 2023. And you could join in with your favorites at 800-642-1234. What shows did you enjoy most in 2022? What have you been recommending? Is there something you're looking forward to watching in 2023? A new show or maybe a second season of The White Lotus or The Bear or Andor or the latest release in the Yellowstone universe? Are you like me and overwhelmed by all the options? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jonathan Gray is a media and television studies professor at UW-Madison. Jonathan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back.
Before we get to the shows, I want to talk about your triage method here. There are too many shows for a human to watch, even if we give up sleep and socializing and stuff. How do you find shows? How do you decide what you're going to check out in the first place?
Well, first, you got to give up on the idea of having any friends. I don't know. I just try to sort of sample a bit here and there and then let the first episode sit for a while. And then realize that some of those shows that I thought I wanted to go back to, maybe I don't. And I think that's a good way of me working out sort of what I, what's a little more humanly possible and what's not.
Are there specific trends or messages that you kept seeing in TV shows from the last year?
I mean, not necessarily just this last year, but I think, you know, what's interesting is we're still seeing a bunch of shows dealing with the pandemic, either directly with another pandemic or with, you know, asking existential questions about life and mattering. I think we're also seeing, you know, a continuation, an exciting sort of trend of Hollywood starting to tell more and more stories about marginalized communities and the kind of people who we haven't seen and heard from anywhere near enough in television history. So those two are encouraging trends.
You sent us some of the shows you enjoyed from 2022. Here's one that I think fits that last category, the program Mo, about Arab American life, topic not always covered in American media. Here's a clip from the trailer to Mo.
I've never been to Palestine. I don't have citizenship there. I don't have citizenship here. I'm like a refugee free agent.
Would you like to try some chocolate hummus?
You say chocolate hummus? You just insulted my grandmother.
Lo siento, I did not know that hummus was Mexican.
You keep thinking that you have to do all this stuff alone, and you don't.
You got us, and you got your family.
So this is based on the comedian Mo Amer's life, at least partly. Can you tell us a little bit about the show and why you liked it?
It's just great fun. You know, I mean, I already loved his appearance in Rami, which is on, you can find it on Hulu. But he's just really funny. You know, I mean, like it's doing all sorts of important things in terms of representation. But it's not just representation of Muslim Americans. We're also, it's a rare show set in Houston. He speaks Spanish too, and his girlfriend Spanish. And so it's a bi, often trilingual show. And as I said, he's got a really sort of upbeat, kind of relaxed style that you wouldn't expect if I told you here's a show about a Palestinian American.
That's Mo on Netflix. Let's shift gears and galaxies now. Andor. Now, I like the Star Wars thing pretty well. I kind of burned out. I've watched too much. But a lot of people are saying Andor on Disney Plus is one that should bring me back. Here's a little bit from that trailer.
To steal from the Empire? To just walk in like you belong? They're so proud of themselves. So fat and satisfied. They can't imagine that someone like me would ever get inside their house.
All right, what's the deal with Andor? How does it stand out in the Star Wars universe, Jonathan?
I really like Andor. I think it's something new for the Star Wars franchise. And, you know, that came out when I was 2 years old and I've loved it. I love playing with lightsabers and so forth. But we're really getting layers of the onion. You know, I mean, Rogue One already asked the question sort of, how did we get the plans to the Death Star? And now we're going behind this. And it's really a story about where the rebellion came from. And it also has a lot to say about, you know, what it's like to live in this world in which there is this huge empire. You don't get the lightsaber battles. We're not getting superpowered people. It's just, what are the regular people doing? And how are they suffering in this? You know, we see inside imperial prisons, all sorts. It's really fun and extremely well acted.
We are talking about great TV shows of 2022 and ones to look forward to in 2023 with Jonathan Gray, Media and Television Studies professor at UW-Madison. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What were you watching over the last year? What did you find binge-worthy? If you want to have a TV party tonight, what show are you going to pull out for you and the friends to watch? What questions do you have? Do you need some recommendations? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's check out another one you've got. Now, this one's weird. I hadn't even heard of this one. It was on your list, a show called The Rehearsal with comedian Nathan Fielder. I've read some descriptions of it. I don't know how to describe it. Here is.
Yeah, please don't ask me to describe it.
Right.
It's weird.
All right, here's a listen, and we can, again, this is from the trailer. You can tell us a bit about what's going on here.
With this show, if your performance isn't accurate, you could ruin someone's life.
This is all sort of absurd.
Keep them crying. Don't let up.
Okay. I've got to tell you something.
I don't want to talk to you again.
Do you find it's been healthy for you here?
Are you sure you want to do this?
I don't really like lying to people.
You're a liar.
Yeah, neither do I.
You're Willy Wonka and I'm Charlie Bucket.
Okay, so that's The Rehearsal, and it's sort of a reality show, or is it? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a weird trailer. I mean, the best I could take a stab at. So if anyone's seen Nathan For You, it's the same guy. And what he did there is sort of find people who had a problem that he could try and help them with in always a bizarre way. And he starts off with that leg with the idea, and hence we have the title, that like maybe if you could just, if you had to deal with a tough conversation, what if you could just rehearse it again and again and again? So he creates the bar that the discussion's going to happen in. He gets actors to play it. But then we go down the rabbit hole and he ends up hiring actors who will play him. He gets a woman to play his sort of would-be wife, all sorts of children to play his children. He uses the HBO budget to get a house. It's very strange, but for that reason, it's just fun. It's different. It ends up talking about religion. It's very existential about the kind of decisions you make in your life. It's funny. You don't ever know where it's going, and it's very refreshing.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jay is with us in Madison. Jay, hello.
Hi, Rob. Hi, guest. My question is, I've got two teenage girls, 12 and 13, and we have a weekly TV night where we watch stuff from streaming and things. And I'm just wondering, what does your guest recommend for our family at that age level?
And Jay, I want to narrow this down a little bit. I have 20-year-old daughters now. They were once that age. Can you give us some examples of ones that have worked for you?
The Mandalorian worked. Wednesday is working. Anything else to add?
Okay, Jay, thanks a lot. Wednesday, the Addams Family sort of reboot there. Jonathan, anything pop in your head that would fit that category for him?
Yeah, Wednesday's fun, but I mean, another one to try might be Hulu's Only Murders in the Building, which is great fun. You've got Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. And it's kind of nice to watch in a family because a lot of the shtick is about sort of boomers meeting with millennials. And so you've got sort of intergenerational play. It's just very lighthearted, fun, good kind of thing that you can watch with the family. That might be a good recommendation there.
Right. There is some language there, Jay. I remember talking to my folks about it. I think I would have done that with my kids, though, despite the language. Jay, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Hey, getting back to the identity and existential stuff, a show that I actually did watch. I'm usually overwhelmed by choice and end up watching nothing. I did watch the first season of Severance, one of your favorites, Jonathan. And I will say, coming in, I said, it's a Ben Stiller production, so it's going to be this wacky screwball comedy. It is not that thing.
No, it's just this, it's a great premise. It's this idea, what if you could separate your work self and your life, you know, your leisure self, literally. And so people have undergone this process called severance. But then we're trying to get to the bottom of who's the company doing this and why. Some excellent performances, all sorts of good actors in there. John Turturro shows up, Christopher Walken. It's really smart. A really crisp show from Apple TV Plus.
We're talking to Jonathan Gray, media and television studies professor at UW-Madison, about his favorite TV shows from 2022, the ones he's excited to watch this new year. We'll get to some of those coming up. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of shows do you like to watch? Is there a show that you are recommending to everyone? You can expand the circle of everyone by calling in now. Are you hoping for a recommendation? Is there something you're excited about in the new year? Did something not work for you? And of course, I'm always curious, how do you watch TV? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Jonathan Gray, media and TV studies professor at UW-Madison, talking about some great TV shows of 2022, some to look forward to in this new year. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What was your go-to TV show this last year? Is there something you are recommending across the board? If you are a fan of TV shows more than movies, why is that? How do you watch? Do you subscribe to some streaming services, all the streaming services? Do you watch a show at a particular time on a broadcast network? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Dusty joins us from the only Wanakee in the world. Dusty, hi.
Hi there. Yeah, I just had a recommendation. The Legend of Vox Machina on Amazon Prime. It's a great animated show after the Critical Role series that's up on Twitch. It's great animation, super entertaining. Season one's already been out. Season two is premiering in a couple weeks. And they already got greenlit for season three.
Now, Dusty, I'm a big nerd. I don't know if you know that. It's a show based on a long-running role-playing game series, right? Critical Role. Seems like it should appeal to me. Does it make the translation? Because I think a lot of role players have thought, this would make a great book or TV show. This one really does?
It does. Yeah, it does. It's based off of the their very first campaign. And it, like, they translate it very, very well. There's tons of talented, like, voice actors that they bring in. Like really surprising ones, really cool. I think it translates well. Like, they definitely embellish some things or change a few things, but the general beats of the story are all there. The first two episodes kind of serve as like an intro to kind of what the show is and how, like, you can get into it for, like, new people. And then after that, it gets into one of the campaign arcs, like, right away. Super entertaining.
Legend of Ex Machina. Dusty, thanks for sharing that with us. Jonathan, that reminds me, in your list of shows to look forward to in 2023, a pair of computer game adaptations from Fallout, which I have played, The Last of Us, which I haven't. Both post-apocalyptic. Fallout was kind of a zany universe, The Last of Us less so. Why are you looking forward to these two game adaptations?
I haven't seen Fallout, but just the people associated with it are great. So you've got Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy, who do Westworld, and I've loved what they've done there. And then you've got Walton Goggins, who I still think is his performance in Justified is one of the best in TV history. And so I can't see how that could go too wrong. And then Last of Us is a brilliant game. It was very, very smart, and its sequel got even smarter. You know, a lot of games have weak stories and weak acting, but Last of Us was really good. So it really lays down the gauntlet for the cast to do a good job. But you've got Pedro Pascal. You've got, if anyone liked their Game of Thrones, Lady Mormont is there as the star, Bella Ramsey. And then Chernobyl was one of the better shows of the last few years. And the person behind that, I'm blanking on the name, is offering us Last of Us. Mm-hmm. So it promises to be a really good, really good series.
And you mentioned Justified. There's a new incarnation of that coming?
There is. I'm really excited about that. I think, if anyone wants to go back, Justified is still one of the better series to have graced television, and it'll be really fun to see some of the old cast come back for that one.
Thanks a lot for that call. Let's go now to Kay with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. I keep hearing all these good things about Abbott Elementary, which I think is on ABC. I'm wondering what your opinion is of that show.
Okay, thanks for the call. A lot of buzz about Abbott Elementary, a comedy set in a school. I've watched a little bit. I liked what I saw. My wife, as usual, got out ahead of me on it, Jonathan, so I didn't keep watching. Have you seen that? Any thoughts on Abbott Elementary?
I've seen two episodes and really liked where it's going, but I have to say thank you, caller, for embarrassing me and picking the one thing that everyone loves that I haven't seen. But everyone whose opinion I trust and really hold up just speaks such glowing things about this show. So it sounds great. I hear lots of things sort of very kind of like feel good Ted Lasso kind of movement, and just, you know, I can't hear enough good things about that show. So I don't think we can be wrong. So I'll be watching alongside you.
Okay, we'll assign that as homework. Let us know, watch it, and let us know what you think about it. Thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Kevin joins us now in Janesville. Kevin, hi.
Hi, two quick ones. I'm a teacher, and Abbott Elementary strikes a little too close to home. Funny, but maybe parts of it shouldn't be funny because it's just too true. My recommendation, though, is PBS masterpiece Miss Scarlet and the Duke. Miss Scarlet is the daughter of a private detective trying to become a private detective in her own right in late 1800s London. And the Duke is her childhood friend who happens to be a detective inspector for Scotland Yard.
Interesting. And I assume this is a British production, Kevin?
No.
Oh, no.
No, I take that back.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Miss Scarlet, I hadn't heard of this one. Kevin, do you, Jonathan, turn to TV from the UK at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm part British, so I have to keep in touch with that part of myself. But I'm embarrassed to say I hadn't even heard of this one.
Oh, so me neither. Oh, no. Again, there's too much TV to know about at all, Jonathan. No embarrassment there.
There certainly is.
and there's people in the other half of this floor who are very happy for that PBS plug. Kevin, thanks so much for sharing that with us. We've got Gene with us now in Reedsburg. Gene, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Gene?
Well, I'm over 65, and I am just blown away, but I can't buy Hulu and Amazon Prime and Apple and Disney, and I can't. What should I be looking for as an over 65-year-old trying to find a service that I can get good shows on? And yes, we do love PBS.
Now, Gene, before we get an answer, over 65-year-old women might like different things than other 65-year-old women. So, what do you like to watch? And maybe we can narrow it down for you that way. Like, what kind of stuff?
I love sci-fi. I love mysteries. I love light comedy.
That narrows it down some. Now, Jonathan, we didn't bring you on to prescribe streaming services. Did any of that ring a bell where you'd point to Gene in any particular direction, though?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what I could almost recommend, and this can be a bit of a nuisance, but is get one of them and watch the things you like. And when it's dried up, cancel the subscription and then get another one. I mean, a lot of these actually have a month free trial or a week free trial. I think sometimes maybe the streaming services don't want me to say this, but sometimes we fall in the trap of thinking we need them all when you can just go with one at a time, watch it until there's nothing else you care about, and then pick up another one.
Excellent. Gene, good luck as you sort that out. Time for one more caller. Will is on the line in Eau Claire. Will, hello.
Hi, guys. I'll make this quick. I couldn't resist calling in. I thoroughly enjoyed a dark miniseries, Ozark. It was on for a couple of years. I think it finished up this last year, and I believe it was on Netflix. I can't remember, but it was beautifully written. Great ensemble cast. And it's the general theme is Dancing with the Devil. So that's about it.
And, well, I haven't seen that. Is that the one with Jason Bateman in a key role?
Yeah. Jason Bateman, Laura Linney. Man, what performances and writing. Just Will, incredible.
Ozark. Thanks a lot, Will, for sharing that one. Jonathan, we just have a couple minutes left. Hit us with a couple more that you find yourself recommending when people ask you about or that you are looking forward to that haven't dropped yet.
So I really love Reservation Dogs, and we just had season 2, and then season 3 is coming up. It's on FX, so you can also get it on Hulu. It's just about 4 kids growing up on a reservation in Oklahoma, dealing with the death of a loved one. It's such a beautiful show. I mean, it's great for representation of Native voices that we haven't heard of, but it's also one of the more meaningful shows I've heard and seen in talking about death and survival. I'm really looking forward to next year, Mrs. Davis. It sounds wild. It's like a nun versus AI, but it's by Damon Lindelof, who wrote Lost, who wrote The Leftovers, who wrote The Watchmen. And so I think he's probably the best writer on TV. So those are two I'd pick, one from the past year, one from the one to come.
Fantastic. Jonathan, thanks again for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me.
That's Jonathan Gray, Media and Television Studies professor at UW-Madison. He joined us today to talk about some TV shows he enjoyed in 2022, shows he's looking forward to in 2023. He had some great recommendations. Thanks for all of your calls. And if there's something you want to plug, or maybe you want advice from fellow listeners, head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let us know a show that you found binge-worthy, one that you watched from beginning to end, one you watched on broadcast, one episode at a time, one week at a time, maybe one that you heard great things about, but it didn't hit it for you. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, check out some of the top science stories of 2022. A lot of cool stuff in astronomy, biology, and beyond. And you can find out what the new year holds for research, potential breakthroughs, stories to watch out for in the headlines to come in 2023. Join the conversation. Maybe share your favorite story. That's tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. A sad and happy farewell to start the new year. Central Time producer Rachel Vasquez is heading to a new job as weekend news editor and anchor at KQED in California. Rachel's been with us at WPR since 2017, most of that time here on Central Time after we stole her from Morning Edition production over on the other network. She's been a great part of the team, lots of fun to work with, and for listeners, she's been a driving force in so many of the great conversations you've heard on the show over the last bunch of years. And as a bonus, if you've ever heard Beyonce sneak into our background music from time to time, that was Rachel's doing. Rachel, thanks for everything. Best of luck on the move, the new job, and your new home. This is Central Time. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we learn about the Victory Garden Initiative in Milwaukee that's working to build communities in the city by helping people grow their own food. Now, have you ever wanted to just drop everything, hop in a car, a plane, a boat, and just go? That's what our next guest did in a single-engine trawler boat. Their journey took over a year and more than 6,000 miles long. It's called America's Great Loop, a giant loop through rivers, waterways, and open ocean that takes you around the eastern part of the United States. Jill and James Iverson started that journey where they live in Manitowoc and ended the trip there this past September. I recently talked with both of them. Here's a listen to that conversation. James, can you briefly tell us what America's Great Loop is?
Well, you kind of described it well in your introduction. It's a circumnavigation of the eastern third of the United States and part of Canada. And it's about 6,000 miles long. It includes going through about 106 locks. And there's voyages on the Great Lakes, on the rivers, on the Gulf of Mexico, and the Atlantic Ocean.
Wow. And Jill, I imagine you don't just hop in your boat and do this. What kind of planning and preparation went into this trip?
Well, we did do some planning. We're longtime cruisers, I should tell you that. So maybe we didn't have to do quite as much planning as people that are brand new to boating. And there are people that do the loop with very little experience, but we've been boating for decades. So, but to get ready for this trip, we did some planning, but not too much, because we really like to be spontaneous and make plans along the way as we go.
I want to ask each of you a favorite part of the trip, and I know it'll be hard to pick just one, but what's something that stood out in your mind? Jill, let's start with you.
Okay. Although I loved big, you know, New York City and being alongside the Statue of Liberty, I have to say St. John's River was really, really special. It's old Florida, old world Florida. So we took a 150-mile side trip off the loop from Jacksonville, Florida, and went all the way down the state, down the middle of the state. And we were especially excited to anchor out behind Pontoon State Park on the Dead River. It was like a jungle. We were surrounded at night using our beam. We saw alligator eyes, and we heard limpkins, which are birds that scream and sound like someone being murdered. People actually call 911 when they
wow.
hear these birds. And wood storks, who are huge storks that can clack through bones. So we felt like we were in Jurassic Park. It was wonderful. We stayed an extra 2 days.
Wow. And James, did you have another favorite part?
Yeah, I have to say, as much as I love the St. John's River, one of the highlights for me was anchoring out right next to the Statue of Liberty
wow.
and spending the night there and watching the lights of the city wink on at night and just being surrounded by it all. And the statue itself is such an iconic thing. We've all seen photographs of it, but to be anchored right next to it was quite a thrill for me.
And Jill, I might think, you know, you're in a boat, just the two of you. It might be kind of like isolating, but reading up on what you did, it sounds like there's a really strong feeling of community, and you met a lot of interesting people along the way.
Oh, we really did. First of all, especially on the rivers, you really build relationship with the other loopers because you all have to go through the locks. And by the way, we went through 106 locks on these trips. So you all have to go through the locks, and you all have to tie up to a wall or a marina or anchor. So we kept running into the same people and building relationships. We also built relationships with a lot of local people. We went out of our way to meet local people everywhere we went. And we also stayed in touch with our dear friends via social media. I don't know what I would do without Instagram and Facebook. We really, since we didn't go home for a whole year, it was really important that people kept in touch with us and we kept in touch with people. And we felt like we had our little 33-foot boat was filled with a couple of hundred good friends.
And James, you both mentioned the locks. I like locks. I like just watching, you know, standing on the shore and watching boats go through them. 106, though, did you ever get tired of locks, or were they still cool after, you know, number 105?
Well, they're, they're physically kind of demanding, and sometimes you have to wait because pleasure boats are the lowest priority in locks. Commercial traffic has purse dibs on a transit through the locks, and so, you know, sometimes, especially on the rivers, on the Mississippi River, I had to wait several hours at a lock in order to get through. And, you know, the surface of Lake Michigan is about 579 feet above sea level. So in order to get from here to the Atlantic Ocean, you have to go down 579 feet, which means a lot of locks. And then to get back, you have to go up 579 feet. So you're transiting all sorts of locks. But I'll tell you what, the people that operate the locks are public servants in the best sense. They were all very nice and very professional, and we always had wonderful experiences with them.
And so I got to ask, as we wrap up, you were gone for well over a year. You said you were in social media contact with people. What was homecoming like, though, getting back home and seeing everybody and starting to settle back in?
Well, I would say, like in The Wizard of Oz, like Dorothy said, there's no place like home. It was just wonderful to get back home and see all our friends and family and to reintegrate ourselves into our community once again.
And Jill, your thoughts on homecoming?
Well, you know, we didn't get to see our grown sons for a whole year and their ladies. And they came down and caught the lines for us. We also had James and I put some bucks on the bar at the Stage Door Pub, the Irish pub in our town, and everyone came out and had a beer with us. And, you know, it was very, very touching. I have to say, in a lot of ways, you know, we came back different people from this trip, and I'd say even better people. You know, just really appreciating all the people in our lives and appreciating our country. It looks a lot better from the water when you don't see strip malls and you don't have to ride on a bunch of ugly highways. You know, it's a pretty wonderful country. And Canada, we love so much. Our Canadian friends are so important to us. So, you know, it's great to be home. Not to say we won't have another adventure, because we've got some planned.
Thank you both so much for joining us, and congratulations on completing the trip. We've been talking to Jill and James Iverson. They live in Manitowoc. They recently completed a year-plus journey around the eastern part of the U.S. on their boat. It's called The Great Loop. They're in the process of writing a book about the experience. And you can find more info on their Instagram page. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a bipartisan group of political observers in La Crosse who have made bets on elections for nearly 50 years.
At Houghton's Restaurant near Viterbo University in La Crosse, a group of seven people gather around a table filled with Friday fish fry specials and pints of beer. This is a group of one-time political heavy hitters from the La Crosse area. They gather around election time each year to talk politics and bet on the outcome of elections. The current group includes a former Republican state Senate president and a Democrat who is a former president of the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents.
I have been the absolute loser. I have been the absolute winner. And I believe that today I'm one of the absolute winners.
Walter Baltz of West Salem has been a longtime supporter of Republican candidates. He's also the only living founder of this little-known group, which calls itself the Select Committee on Election Predictions. Baltz used to have lunch in La Crosse in the late 1970s with a radio personality and a doctor. The conversation would often turn to politics.
And we'd argue as to who was going to be the winner of the upcoming elections. And I finally got tired of so much baloney, and I said, the only way to get people to be honest about this is to put some money on it.
The Select Committee has operated largely in obscurity over the years. The only mention of the group was in a New York Times article on the 1988 presidential election. While Baltz can't pinpoint when the group started, the Times article says it was in 1978. Few rules govern the wagering the Select Committee does, except that they place bets at least twice a year during the April and November general elections.
Anyone who was not a winner but was not the absolute loser, each one of those people would have to pay $5 to the absolute winner. The absolute loser had to buy lunch for everyone at the next event.
Dick Record, what are you doing on the congressional race?
On this particular morning, it's the Friday before the November general election, and the group is picking winners in the statewide and local races.
It's Brad Paff, Van Orden.
One.
Key national elections, like the U.S. Senate races in Georgia and Pennsylvania, are also on the ballot in case there's a tie. University of Wisconsin La Crosse Emeritus Political Scientist Joe Heim has been a voting member and the Select Committee's record keeper since the 1980s.
I think all of us enjoy the camaraderie and the political discussions. I think we all respect each other. We come from all sorts of different backgrounds, but we all seem to have contact with the political circles and political activities.
Former La Crosse mayor and longtime Democratic state representative John Mettinger has been a winner and a loser in the 20 years he's been part of the group. He says politics might be better today if people with different ideas sat down and talked with each other, like the select committee does.
With this group, we're here to be honest, and that's why sometimes when we go down the list of people running for office, we wind up picking people that we don't like at all, but we figured that they're going to win.
Walter Balt says when the group started, there were just three members. The loser used to have to pay for lavish meals, including caviar, steaks, and champagne. Now, the loser pays for fish fry and beer. These days, there are eight members, and the group will consider adding new members, including its first woman. WPR's John Davis wrote and produced this story. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Coming up, during World War II, people around the U.S. turned their yards into victory gardens to help supply food. Find out about a victory garden program happening now in Milwaukee. That's next here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. When we think about farms and gardens, we might think of rural Wisconsin. But a group in Milwaukee is bringing food production into urban environments and building community along the way. The organization is called the Victory Garden Initiative. Sandra Jones is executive director of the Victory Garden Initiative in Milwaukee. She's retired from the faculty of the Department of African and African Diaspora Studies at UW-Milwaukee, and she's the author of the book Voices of Milwaukee, Bronzeville. Sandra, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you tell us about the mission of the Victory Garden Initiative?
The mission of the Victory Garden Initiative is very simple. We want to teach people how to grow their own healthy organic food. We want to build, we want to introduce gardening into the community in a sustainable way, a sustainable and just way.
And can you introduce us to the community you're serving? Where are most of your efforts focused?
Okay. Victory Garden Initiative sits in the Harambe neighborhood in the heart of Milwaukee's Black community, African-American community. It's one of the poorest communities in the state. It's a food desert within the boundary of Harambe, which is from Capitol Drive to North Avenue, 20th Street to Holton Avenue in the city of Milwaukee. There are no grocery stores, no major food markets. So you have corner stores, you have dollar stores, and that kind of thing. So it's what is considered a food desert. Well, we are an acre and a half urban organic farm that sits right in the middle of that community. And our aim is to provide healthy, organic produce and food to the people in the community. We want to make sure that food is accessible and above all that it is free. So everything we grow, we have programs designed to distribute that food. People can come to the farm and pick what they need and we're developing a program that actually takes that food out into the community.
And as I understand it, you're working with volunteers from that community to grow the food in the first place?
Indeed. We have hundreds of volunteers that come and support the farm and the various programs that we have. And let me tell you a little bit about those programs.
Sure.
In 2008, Gretchen Mead actually founded Victory Garden Initiative, and she founded it by... her and a group of community members decided that they wanted to build garden boxes in people's backyards. And so they started out with 35. They built 35 garden boxes that first year. As of last year, we have built over 6,000 garden beds in people's backyard, in churchyards, in schoolyards, for other nonprofit organizations across the city. We build those boxes, and again, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers come and help us construct and put together those boxes. We fill it with organic dirt. We provide seeds, and we also provide instruction to people who need it on how to grow their own healthy food.
What do you hear from people who are maybe for the first time growing food in their own garden, or, you know, taking home food that they help grow at the acre and a half farm you were talking about?
What I hear is, you know, there is nothing like when you're in your kitchen cooking your dinner to going out to the garden to get what you need. There's nothing like it. The food that you grow yourself does not, it doesn't have chemicals. We don't use any chemicals on the farm. All of our food is organic, and that's what we teach to the community. And so people appreciate that. Not to mention the health benefits that they gain, that people gain from growing their own food. And that's the thing that we hear. We have other programs too. The Blitz, the annual Blitz is our signature program, but we also have programs for young people. We have a YEP program. It's called Youth Education Program, where we actually go into MPS schools and work with children in after school and summer programs, teaching them. We build boxes on the schoolyard and we teach them how to grow food. And not only that, we have cooking programs. We have a chef and trainings program, for example, and with our YET program that teach kids how to prepare the foods that they grow. And a lot of it, you know, is new to them. A lot of the fresh vegetables, you know, that kind of thing. I had a young person on the farm last year or this past year. We have a lot of fruit trees on the farm. And I called a group of them over and the young man pulled a plum from the tree. And he said, I have never in my life eaten a fresh piece of fruit off a tree that I picked. So, you know, it's very rewarding when you hear things like that. And when you understand that this program is designed to give these skills to people, to young people, that they will take with them throughout their life. Another program that we have is our Victory Garden Urban Farm Market Table. Mm. So at least once a week. But first, let me say that the farm is open 24/7. So people can come into the farm and pick what they need to eat. And we grow everything. We grow corn and potatoes. We grow collard greens and kale and cucumbers and broccoli and tomatoes and everything. And people can come in and pick what they need. But we also set up a food stand, a roadside food farm stand. Our motto is pay what you can. And if you don't have any money, take what you need. And that is also a very popular program that we offer at the Victory Garden Initiative.
Sandra, we just have a minute or so left, Sandra. I just wanted to ask, it's winter. It's a great planning time. You've got a lot going on already. What is on your mind as you look toward 2023 and the growing season, just in our last minute or so?
In the last minute, what we really want to do, it's one thing to grow the food and have it available for people to come and pick what they need at the farm. But we also need to develop a distribution system for that food. So we want to make contacts with, you know, again, schools and churches so that we can bring that healthy food to the people who need it the most.
Sandra, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
All right. Thank you for having me.
That's Sandra Jones, executive director of the Victory Garden Initiative in Milwaukee. We talked to her today about the efforts to bring local food production into Wisconsin's biggest city. If you want to learn more about the Victory Garden Initiative, we have a link. You can find it over at WPR.org/Central Time. That's WPR.org/Central Time. Check that out for more information about lots of the conversations we have here on the show, articles, reports, recipes, and more. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, homelessness often gets blamed on things like poverty or addiction. The author of a new book joins the show to tell us there's a more fundamental problem, not enough housing in many communities around the state and around the country. We'll look at the problem and possible solutions that communities are trying. And what happened to air travel over the holidays? We'll look at the Southwest Airlines meltdown, some lessons for the future, and you can get us started right now. Did you travel by air over the last 2 or 3 weeks? Did it go well? Did it go poorly? Either way, we want to hear from you. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Tell us your air travel story over the holidays for better or for worse. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Coming up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then it can feel like the debate over American history and how we teach it is getting increasingly contentious. But are Americans actually divided in reality? We'll talk to the head of a polarization research group about their new report called Defusing the History Wars. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.